ANZ Voices welcomes you to the Business of Bluntstock podcast with Tim Rowe and Charmaine Bukovec.
Welcome to episode 13 of the Business of Bloodstock podcast, and joining myself, Justin Darcy, and co-host Tim Rowe is Marcus Heritage of Swettenham Stud. A young man going places, Marcus talks about how he ended up in his position at Swettenham Stud in nominations, as well as a recent result at the recent Inglis Premier Sale where he sold a Parada colt for $100,000.
Welcome to episode 13 of the Business of Bloodstock podcast. We're delighted to have Marcus Heritage, who's works at these days at Swettenham Stud, but he's been around a few different places, and we're about to find out some of his history and insights and where he may end up. Marcus, are we talking to you from the penthouse at Crown Towers after Inglis Premier?
No, the check hasn't come through yet, so we're still battling away in Pasco Vale. But thank you for having me on, boys.
No worries, Marcus. We'll look forward to that party later on.
Very good. Now, Marcus, obviously, a young bloke in the industry, a little bit about yourself. Obviously, you grew up on the Gold Coast. Tell us a little bit about your first exposure to racing and all the bloodstock industry at that. And I guess give us a bit of insight as to how you fell in love with the sport initially.
Yeah, so I certainly didn't grow up on a farm or around horses, but my old man always raced a few, and in the more recent years has dipped the toe into breeding. So I was always going to the races as a kid, and obviously being on the Gold Coast, the Magic Millions season was like Christmas for me. So I'd always pop out there and tag along with a couple of the trainers and look at the yearlings, drag dad out of the bar and try and tell him to spend his money on horses. So I was hooked from a young age, and it sort of stemmed from there.
Now, you worked with Racing Queensland as well briefly. What foundations did that set for you in terms of working with thoroughbreds, and I guess what experience did that actually give you?
Yeah, so the Racing Queensland course during my schooling was my first taste of hands-on work with the horses. I was lucky enough to get a couple of days off a week from school, which was the most important part at the time. And I worked for Simon Hunter, who was the bloodstock consultant now for Greg Urell, but he was training only three or four in work at a time on the Gold Coast at the local track, and he'd come pick me up in the morning, and it was just the two of us, so it was plenty of one-on-one time, and I learned everything off him because I was his only staff member, and it was the best thing for me, and it gave me that first grounding to do all the hands-on work, gave me confidence with the horses, and I knew doing that course that was the career for me.
On Sunder, it's probably a name that a lot of people wouldn't know, but Simon, as you touched on, does buy for Greg Urell, and they trade a lot of horses to Hong Kong. And I don't know Simon that well, but I think he's probably an underrated judge. Would that be a fair comment?
Yeah, he's got a great eye for a horse. The Greg Urell stable, they have a lot of winners, but they don't spend huge money on these yearlings, and they turn them into nice horses, get plenty of results. And as you alluded to, the Hong Kong trade that's opening up, they've done pretty well out of that. So Simon's got a good eye for a horse, and he bought a couple of horses off the farm at Swettenham this week at the Premier Sale. So fingers crossed he had his eye in this week.
Now, shortly after, obviously, your time in Queensland, being at home, you made the move to Victoria and worked for, obviously, a couple of stables down here before making that move to Swettenham for the first time. Would you be able to tell us a little bit about that and the decision behind making that move down south?
Yeah, so I'd met the Hayes family at the Magic Millions as a kid. My old man had a couple of horses with them, and I got along with those guys. They were really open to having me at the farm and giving me my first full-time job out of school. So I finished school, and at 17, packed my bags and moved to Euroa. JD Hayes was actually coaching the local footy team at the time. So I'd work during the week at Lindsay Park and play footy on the weekends for the Euroa Magpies. So the Hayes family were really good to me as a young person getting into the industry. Obviously, moving away from home at a young age is tough at times, and I think moving to a country town like Euroa, where everyone was so welcoming, it was the best thing for me, and I learned so much just surrounding myself in one of racing's royal families. So the Hayes family, the young boys are doing a great job with the stable now, but they were just sort of starting to come through when I was there. And yeah, just to see their passion and how their system runs, it's a great place to have horses, and it was the best spot for me to learn.
A bit different to Cavill Avenue, Euroa, Marcus.
Yes, it was certainly a lifestyle change for me, but yeah, and that comes with its challenges. But Euroa's a beautiful little town, and yeah, everyone in the town took me in like one of their own. So it was a good part of my life.
Had you played Aussie rules before you moved to Euroa, or?
Yes, I played footy all the way growing up. I grew up in Queensland, but I was very much a Aussie rules boy.
What sort of horses were sort of around, as we know, as you sort of touched on, Lindsay Park sort of reached its new generation now with the boys running it, the brothers, and they're going great guns. But, you know, when David went back to Hong Kong and they lost a few owners and horses, did you ever doubt that they'd get to the point where they are now and as quickly as they have?
They're just such likeable people. They're hard workers. They were certainly faced with the challenge when the boys took over the reins, but they've got their good systems in place, and I think most importantly, their clients that stayed were definitely going to keep supporting them because they're such good people, and hard work's always going to shine through when you're faced with challenges.
You mentioned before that it can be a bit daunting for someone looking to make a big move to another state or just another area away from family, away from the people they know. What sort of tips do you have for someone out there who may even be listening that wants to make that change and try and find something different within the industry or just even in general life where, you know, to make that move, it's that big step you have to take and you need to be brave to take it, but you've been there, you've done it, you've experienced it and it's been successful for you. What tip have you got for someone out there looking to do something similar?
I think you've just got to bite the bullet. I made the move and you quickly realise there's plenty of other people in the same position that have done the same thing. And I was lucky enough. I had family that would always come down and visit me. I had the weekends to go and play footy, but I was working with a lot of English and Irish and French people who were on the other side of the world, and they'd obviously taken that punt. And I think the industry do a good job of getting around each other, and you very much become a bit of a family at your own workplace because everyone's facing the similar challenges of being a long way from home. So I think you've just got to go out and do it. It's much more enjoyable, and it gets easier. So the hardest part's just saying yes. So once you say yes, take on those challenges. And I think the amount of things that you do in your lifetime that weren't necessarily a plan, but that it all works out in the long run. And some of your best memories are things that come from left field.
And then you decide to, from Lindsay Park, make the jump across to the breeding side and join Swettenham. Is that next piece on your CV?
Yes, I was always pretty keen on the bloodstock side of things. I'd always look forward to the Magic Millions catalogue getting sent out every January as a kid, and always studied those pedigrees and took an interest to young horses. So I was very keen to get involved with that. I was getting sick of the early wake-ups, that's for sure, and the racing stable side of things does get tough at times. So through Jenny McAlpine, who obviously works for Lindsay Park, she teed me up with Adam Sangster and said he's the best man to be working for in the breeding game. So I shot across to Swettenham Stud and did a season on the stallions, and learnt so much about horse care. And obviously when you're in the racing stables, they sort of turn up as late yearlings, and it was good to experience what goes on in the lead up to the horses going to the racing stables.
And that was a period when, you know, Toronado was on the rise, and, you know, a good time to join the team, I guess. And what was it like handling a horse such as Toronado and Passance de Lune and a few others on the roster?
Yeah, certainly daunting at times, but outstanding. Toronado He was at a modest fee of $25,000 at the time, and he was just starting to get those winners through. And it was actually the season that Poisson Stallone had a place getter in the Oaks in the Derby. So he kept us nice and busy and made sure that we had plenty of night covers. So it was a good experience. And once again, working at a place where there's things you're doing that you'd never thought you'd be doing. So it was a good time at the farm, and they were a really good mob to work for.
I won't give up my sources, but someone suggested that you've got a few war wounds from working with the stallions.
Yes, I've got a big dirty scar on the back of my knee, thanks to Coronado, who got himself in a bit of a tangle in the paddock one day with a hot wire. So I thought I was doing the right thing, helping him out, and he took off and put me through the fence. So I've got a bit of a scar. It was nice of the team to run down to the paddock so quickly to, I thought they were coming to help me, but they were just to making sure that the horse was okay.
They obviously knew you were pretty tough, Marcus, so you're here to tell the story. It's the main
and
deal.
Replaceable.
Never.
Mate, they breed them tough in Queensland. And speaking of Queensland as well, you did make your way back up there to work for Aquis after your first stint at Swetnam. Would you be able to tell us how that unfolded and what followed after that as well?
Yes, so we just battled through the COVID times, and Victoria wasn't the place to be, and I was ready to go home to some sunshine for a little while, and Jonathan Davies at Aquis was good enough to give me my first opportunity to get into the office and learn the business of bloodstock, and he was very good to me. Showed me the ropes, and it was good to work for a place like Aquis because they do things in their own way at times, and there's so many things to learn, and it's quite an interesting operation that's obviously having success.
And obviously, you know, you touched on JD there, Jonathan Davies, but also Paul Knight at Aquis, and still there now, very experienced industry person, obviously at Magic Millions for a long time. I'm sure you would have learned a lot from the knowledge that he possesses.
Yeah, exactly right. Being a young person, getting into the industry, you certainly want to surround yourself with the best people. And Paul Knight, he knows his pedigree so well. I've never seen anyone read through a catalogue and be so knowledgeable. And between him and Jonathan, I just sat in between them and picked their brains, and it was a good experience.
You ended up moving back down to Victoria doing some stuff with Danny O'Brien as well. Was that in the Vow and Declare days? If so, I mean, obviously a Melbourne Cup winner. How exciting would that have been for the stable?
Yeah, so I jumped on the bandwagon after they won the Melbourne Cup with Vow and Declare and won the Oaks with Miami Bound. I thought they were a stable that was clearly doing a few things right. So I joined that team, and it was a good time. They had some good horses. Russian Camelot was on his way up at the time, and I was surrounded in some pretty good horses, and it was a good learning experience. It was at times I was trusted with different roles that I hadn't had in the past in terms of taking horses around and caring for them. So it was lots of learning, but plenty of fun too.
Two big stables like Lindsay Park and then Danny O'Brien, I'm sure there's a lot of similarities to how they go about it, but was there any noticeable differences about how they train their horses as both successful trainers in their own right?
Yeah, and that was another decision that I had when I decided to join Danny O'Brien's. I thought that it's another big stable where you'll have plenty of good horses, but he certainly has a different training resume than the likes of Lindsay Park. Lindsay Park have their system where they get them up and running nice and early. They have plenty of two-year-old winners, plenty of winners over the shorter trips, where Danny O'Brien has more of a focus on those middle distance to staying types, and was having plenty of success with his European imports at the time, and just the different ways of training, certainly a more patient approach, but Both systems certainly have had their successes.
I guess with your close-up knowledge of Russian Camelot, I know he's at a rival stud now at Wynn Victoria, but you believe he's got the credentials to be a good stallion?
Yeah, certainly. I saw a few of his first crop of yearlings, and they impressed me. They probably weren't what I was expecting. He seems to throw a bit more substance than what he's got himself. He's a lighter framed horse with plenty of leg, and I thought his yearlings were quite well put together, and he's throwing a nice tight. And the good judges are buying him, which is always an important part of getting a young stallion up and coming.
Now, shortly after your stint with Danny O'Brien as well, you ended up back at Swettenham for the second time and still currently there now. What was the decision there behind making that move back to where your initial breeding experience was?
It was the people. The people are really good there. Sam Matthews, who's the general manager, he's a great person, a hard worker, and plenty to learn from him. But as well as Adam Sangster, he's just the best boss you could possibly have, the nicest person, and he's very passionate about the industry, and he's more than happy to give these young people a go, as we saw last week with Mitch Pearce and his Crosley draft. I think Adam does a great job of recognising young people coming through the industry, and he gives everyone a fair go.
I think this is a good time to bring it on. I'll bring it up. You touched on the premier sale, and this is, we do have a segment with called A Share in Success, proudly sponsored by Jimmy Unwaller, a vest of Bloodstock. Thank you, Jimmy. Again, around all the sales and doing the legwork and for clients and so forth. But you had your own bit of success through Mitch's draft, selling a Pirata yearling for $100,000. It's not easy to do, and there's a bit of a backstory to this horse.
Yeah, so it was a very good result, and funny enough, it would have been around the time that you guys released this podcast with Jimmy Unwaller, and I remember him saying that his advice for young people in the game is to get some skin in the game, take the punt, whether it's a small share in a horse or breeding a horse, just get some investment in, and you never know what might happen, and it might allow for the ball to get rolling. So I was at Aquis at the time, and I did a foal share to Pirata with a mare. JD was always at me saying, you've got to start breeding, you've got to get a horse. So I bit the bullet and got a Dream Ahead mare. She was unplaced, but she had a Spill the Beans on the farm that was a beautiful type. So I thought this mare could certainly throw a type. So she threw a nice foal. She was a bit of a tricky breeder and didn't get in foal until the fourth time around. And by the time she was in foal, it was getting very, very late. So the colt was a November 20 foal, but he was a beautiful, strong colt. So I took him to the weanling sales at the Great Southern Sale. And obviously, being a late foal, he was still maturing. He was a bit behind. He had a few things on x-rays that were just going to be time. And I put him through the ring hoping to get out, and he was absolutely friendless, didn't get a bid. So I put my hand up myself and bought them out for $4,000, thinking that I'd take him home, let him grow out, being a late foal, give him plenty of time, and I might just race him. But he seemed to really go on with it once he came back to Swettenham, and he kept growing into a beautiful horse. We x-rayed him up, and he was spotless. He'd got over his little time things, and I thought it's worth taking the punt and putting him through the ring. The mare had thrown a winner by then. Pirata was kicking on, so we sent him across to Mitch, who prepped him up a treat, and the rest is history. Got to the complex and had a few looks, so I thought I might be able to get 20 or 30 here. But to get realise $100,000, that's, couldn't have imagined it going that well.
So I imagine that you sort of touched on Puratics come out with Coleman and some other nice horses like Fearless, and, you would have been barracking pretty hard during the spring and now sort of late summer, early autumn with the few nice Piratas coming out.
Yeah, it's amazing how things work, and obviously working in nominations, I know how fickle the stallion game can be, so timing's very important, and Pirata's now down at Yulong in Victoria, so he probably gained a bit more relevance down here, and he'd obviously had success down here with Coleman being a very, very talented horse.
Your father was involved in it, which was where a mare or a filly and very good filly and mare called Fundamentalist, in wearing the Aquas colours. And funny, we're talking to you the day before the Randwick Guineas, and they've been showing replays this week of the Autumn Sun charging, running over the top of Fundamentalist. So honest.
Yes, I get reminded every year when they start posting replays of the Autumn Sun's win. But she was a brilliant filly. She was instrumental in my career. I was at Lindsay Park at the time and strapped her a few times. I strapped her when she came second in the 1,000 guineas at 200-1. We were on it, so that was an exciting time. But she was a lovely horse. She was a bit of a tease. She placed in five group ones. So in terms of my old man reinvesting in the industry and myself getting the passion, I think she sparked us because we were so close on so many occasions. It certainly leaves you with a bit of hunger.
And back to, you know, you're back at Swettenham and been there sort of for about 4 years and really making a name for yourself. But Swettenham's going ahead as well with Toronado having a great premier sale and knocking up winners in Hong Kong. I'm Immortal showing promise, but you announced not that long ago at the Classic sale that you've secured Lofty Strike, obviously the son of Snitzel, out of a Golden Slipper winner in Overreach, and obviously there's Sam Matthews and Adam Sangster there, but I believe you have basically got the deal over the line, pivotal to the agreement getting done.
Yes, we're very keen to get a new stallion. We had that empty box at the farm last year, but the right horse hadn't come across our desk, and we sort of put a list of a couple of horses to target heavily, and we really wanted Lofty Strike. He was at the top of the list, and we approached Paul Lafitas about standing his son of Snitzel at stud. We went out and saw him. He's a beautiful horse. The day we saw him the first time, we had to have him. He's got plenty of scope. He was obviously a very good racehorse, undefeated at two, but he trained on and was a Group 2 winner, multiple Group 1 placed as a three-year-old out of a slipper winner. Those pedigrees are just, they're impossible to find. So to get him at our stud, he'll be really well supported by the breeders. And it's certainly something that the Victorian industry was calling out for, more of a colonial speed horse that's precocious, but really well suited to a wide range of our Victorian mares.
What's it like doing a stallion deal? I'm sure it's not as simple as, you know, rocking up and getting the deal done. I'm sure there's a lot of back and forth and negotiations and, almost like a game of poker in some regards, I'd suggest.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because we announce the stallion and it gets out, but these things don't happen overnight. It was probably a solid 6 months or so when we first approached Paul about his horse, and we're very, very keen to buy into this horse. And it's a long process with lots of different things that have to go into it. But as a young person in the industry, it's quite eye-opening on what goes on behind closed doors.
How's Lofty Strike actually settled in at Swettenham? Obviously, he's been there for a bit over a month now. We often hear people say we want to hear these fresh stallions sort of let down at stud. How's he tracking towards, I guess, leading into the breeding season in a couple of months?
Yeah, so he was just coming back into work when we got the deal done, and he's going to race on. But from previous experiences, we like to have these horses come to the farm nice and early and let down, and he's settled in terrifically. He certainly doesn't know his job is a stallion yet. He's one of the quietest horses on the farm at the moment. He's just a dude. He come in, he's got plenty of presence. He sort of, Coronado's always been the boss, but Lofty Strike moved in next door, and he's settled in perfectly, and he'll let down into a beautiful horse.
Adam Sangster, is this an intriguing character to me, because he is, you know, he's steeped in racing royalty. I guess his father, Robert, and, there's an audio book now with the Horse Trader, which I've listened to a little bit. Have you had to listen to that yet, or have you read the book or read the audio book or listened to the audio book?
I'm currently reading the book now, actually, and it's a brilliant read. I highly recommend anyone. The books are quite hard to get your hands on, and I was a long way down the line. That's why I'm only just reading it now. But the audio book's out, and it's quite interesting. There's quite a few parts in there that they're back. What the book's about is we're going through a similar time in our industry in terms of sort of coming off a few really hot sales, and when it comes back a touch, and how the industry reacts to these sorts of changes. But in terms of Adam Sangster, he's brilliant to work for. As you said, he's royalty in our world. But I've never met someone so down to earth. He certainly celebrates everybody else's successes before his own, and he always says that we're in the business of entertainment. So he certainly understands that. He's there to enjoy the successes, and yeah, we certainly do that.
The big one for me with Adam is he remembers everyone's names. Is that something that you sort of picked up as well? He only has to be introduced to someone once or twice and remembers people's names. And for myself, that to me is a massive thing. You know, Adam Sangster remembers who Justin is. Like, that's, I don't know. It's, so I think it gives people a bit of confidence in themselves in the industry as well. When someone of, you know, Adam's caliber, you know, respects and knows who you are as well.
Yes, exactly right. I even when I worked on the Stallions a few years back, he'd be riding around the farm on his push bike, but he'd always pull over and have a chat with you. I've never met someone who is so good at remembering names. I'm shocking at it. And he may have met someone once for the first time 3 years earlier, but he'll know their name, and he'll even remember what horses they owned.
We're sort of getting towards the end here, but I thought, again, you sort of touched on it earlier, but as a young person in the industry, you know, the staffing's an issue, I know, but is there something that you'd like to see implemented to try and attract more people to the industry?
There's quite a few things that I think as the industry we should be working on and improving on. I think the most important thing is just make the industry attractive to outside people that want to get involved. Obviously, I worked in racing stables, and the work-life balance at times is near on impossible with those early starts. And I always had mates that didn't work in the industry that just couldn't understand why it's has to be like that. And I don't think it has to be like that. And even in the media, we have ANZ do a great job of being positive, but there's certain media outlets that are supposed to be on our side that obviously put out articles that paint racing in a negative light. And I think in this day and age where media is so accessible, we should be utilising that to put out positive news about the industry and really encourage people to get involved.
Thanks for that. I would say that the media should report what's happening without fear or favour on that, but take your points on board. Let's for a lot of moment, a few easy sort of questions to finish up, Marcus. Do you have any hobbies outside racing? Obviously, there's a lot of time racing 7 days a week, and as you touched on in racing stables, work-life balance is difficult, but what do you get up to when you do have a spare moment?
I'm a bit of a sports nut, so I love my American football. I love my Aussie rules. Even play a bit of golf at times, but I'm not too good at it. But all things sport. I've also got a little Australian cattle dog, Blue Heeler, Tucker. So he keeps me with my hands full because he's a bit of a menace. So plenty of dog walks, but when I'm putting the feet up, it's often watching sport.
And do you have a favourite holiday destination, maybe even the old stomping grounds at Cavill Avenue where you get up to all sorts there, I'm sure?
Yeah, so Cavill's wasn't at the top of that list, but America is outstanding. I see, obviously, being an NFL tragic, I love travelling around the States when I've done that a couple of times to go to those games. And I think the Americans in America are a lot different than the ones we get out here, and they love the Australian visitors, and I think they spoil you when you get over there. But I also went down to Queenstown after the cracker sale, and must say that's outstanding. A bit closer to home and a great spot.
Restaurant recommendations, as you know, on this sales circuit and breed, you know, wining and dining clients. Any recommendations where you take these people?
Up our way near the farm, we're very close to Mitchelton Winery, who do an outstanding feed. But Ngambia as a town's got a little Italian place called 1860, and they do an outstanding feed. But for anyone on the sales circuit that is on the Gold Coast, in Burleigh, where I grew up, Jimmy Wah's outstanding Asian fusion joint. So it's high on the list.
Are you a bigger fan of the breeding sale? The breeding season or sales season as a whole?
The breeding season's always very exciting. I love the foaling time. It's like unwrapping presents when every night when there's a mare foaling. So it's hard to go past that. The sales season is good because we no longer consign yearlings, so it's a bit quieter for me.
What's the future hold for Marcus Heritage?
I'd like to think one day I'll be a bloodstock agent, but I really love my time at Swettenham Stud, and I'm in no rush to leave Swettenham. I'm really enjoying my time, and we've got some exciting young stallions that I'm looking forward to building up.
Marcus, mate, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. You're a young man going places. I'm sure anyone out there listening is certainly going to learn a thing or two here as well. And mate, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you very much, guys.